We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
The field is set for Omaha, Vanderbilt, Arizona, Stanford, NC State, Texas, Mississippi State, Tennessee, and Virginia. Kyle Schassberger and Michael Cerber with you. I'm on Twitter at Kyle Schass. He's at L_Cerberino. For the Commodores, it's their fifth appearance, seeking their third national championship. Arizona making their 18th trip to Omaha. Stanford, their 17th, last winning in 87 and 88. And NC State making their third ever trip. The most unlikely, I think, of the eight teams that we've had. More on that in a moment. Texas, 37th trip overall. Mississippi State, their 12th. Tennessee, there for the first time since 2005, making their sixth stop in Omaha. And Virginia, making their fifth visit, winning it all in 2015, losing to Vanderbilt in the national championship in 2014. Cerber, I mean, this is a great field, dude. I mean, the lead is Arkansas, the top-ranked team. We will continue to not have them become the national champions. The number one overall seed has not won this thing since 1999. We do have a chance, though, for Vanderbilt to repeat as champions for the first time in 10 years since South Carolina did it. But what do you think, man? I mean, do we have the best teams? What are your initial thoughts about the field of eight here as we embark on Omaha this weekend?
Yeah, I think we did get the best eight other than Arkansas. But, you know, all credit to NC State. They took out the number one team. So, I mean, I know you would love for your Irish to be there, and maybe there's an argument to be had for them being one of the best teams. But I don't think, I think everybody earned their way in. We had a few good matchups. We had a couple, you know, snoozers, to be honest, in a few of these series. But, you know, overall, really good. And I think, you know, the NC State deal was really fascinating considering how Friday went for them.
Absolutely, no question. And we'll dive more into the Kevin Copps decision for him to start in Game 3 against NC State. But the focus here is going to be more so to look ahead to what we're going to have this weekend and over the next week and a half in Omaha as the Supers are in our rearview mirror. Half the 18 College World Series field swept a week ago, that being Vanderbilt, Stanford, Texas, and Tennessee. And, of course, top-ranked Arkansas, the top seed, will not be joining the festivities. I do got to ask, though, man. I know you're on vacay. This isn't a staycation. You're actually on an island of some sorts on the East Coast. I'm coming off my vacation. I think I've sweat out all my pizza. I'm feeling good. My shoulder's a bit banged up. I might have torn it, but that's okay. That's neither here nor there. I want to know, how's beach life? How's the salt light treating my server here ahead of the start of the College World Series?
Yeah, no, it's good, man. I've been having my toes in the sand, day drinking on a regular basis, have the out-of-office reply up on the email so everyone knows to leave me alone, with the exception of you, Shass. You can call me anytime. But, yeah, no, it's been a good week, man. It's not a staycation like I took, I think, like a month ago or something like that. But that being said, like, I was sitting on the beach like, holy crap, it's still college baseball season. This has been a long year for athletics, man. Like, I know baseball runs longer than runs later than any other sport, most generally. But I was just thinking, I was like, man, we are still not done. These kids have been out of school for like a month and a half. Well, the majority of students have been out of school for a month and a half. These kids are taking summer classes, I would assume. But yeah, man, it's vacation's good. How's life in the Trafo? How's Winston?
It's so good to be back, man. Less humidity. Like I told you last week when we last spoke, and I was in Chicago, and I went downtown that day, our last recording. Man, the heat, the humidity, you're just sweating through your clothes almost instantly as soon as you get out of your car. And then, like, you get a beverage. Like, I went to Giordano's to get my first taste of deep dish last week when I was home. By the way, I got it twice. I went to Luminati's on the way home, picked up an entire medium deep dish just for myself, ate half of it before the drive, and the other half before I stayed the night in Beckley, West Virginia at, like, midnight on Saturday night. So, dude, I got more than enough of my deep dish, my tavern style. I've sweated all out. I've ran 3 miles every single day since, and I will continue to try to accomplish that feat every day. But man, being back home, being able to get back into a routine, into a rhythm, not, you know, day drinking every single day and then being spread so thin where you're trying to get carted around and you know, chauffeured to see this person and that person and go to this bar or this family party, and you know, it's so much, man. Like, you're fortunate, Cerber, because you know, you're not far, like, you grew up in this area, mm-hmm. you know, yeah, in a yeah. sense. Yeah. So, like, imagine being displaced in a way where you're 10 hours, 11 hours, 12 hours away from home. You know, it's hard. When you go home, it's like a rock tour, like a summer tour. I can't imagine what rock stars and artists and bands go through, man. Like, they stretch it out over an entire season. Imagine squeezing that down into 7 or 8 days. Like, that's, I felt like a rock star. I golfed almost every single day. That's probably why my shoulder hurts as much as it does. I'm not doing myself any favors by still lifting and throwing weight through the ceiling, because now I can't even lift my arm above my head. We'll see how it is when I golf later this afternoon. So, yeah, man, I was hurting, but I'm almost back to full strength outside of the shoulder. And I hear you've had some good pizza too while you've been out on the beach, huh?
Yeah, man, we stopped at this, like, we just happened to be like, man, we need to eat something. We've been drinking since 10 in the morning. Yes. It's now 2 o'clock. We need to get some bread in our system. And we just happened to stop at this little pizza place in Southport, and they was like really banging pizza. It wasn't a, you know, a very doughy crust. It wasn't a New York style, though. It was just kind of like, I don't know. It was like party pizza, and it was really good, and it really hit the spot. Not just because I was drunk, but it was a solid spot. But they had these things on the table, because it was only outdoor seating, with the exception of a few tables, like in a covered or an enclosed patio type situation. But so there was like some flies, you know. Naturally, you're outside, you're at the beach. There's flies. When they brought our food, man, I'd never seen these before, so tell me if you have. They brought us this thing that they put on the table. It was like a tall column, like almost pyramid-esque type thing, and they turned it on, and it had this, like, it had these blades on it that weren't, like, sharper. They were flimsy, but they just, you know, spun to, like, constantly keep, you know, circulation to ward off the flies. It's the most ingenious thing I've ever seen. Is this something that is like widespread now that I just missed because I didn't eat out as much during quarantine, or like, is this a brand new thing that this place has revolutionized? Have you heard of these before? Do you catch what I'm picking up what I'm putting down here?
No, not at all. I have no idea what you're talking about. Like, this is something from, you know, another galaxy.
So you're constantly fanning when you're eating outside. You're constantly fanning your plate, right? Everyone's been there. It was not necessary at this place. It was amazing. Now, one downside. We were under a tree, and a bird pooped on my wife's back. That did happen. Oh. Brand new shirt. She'd just gotten it. Branded Southport and everything. She was looking super touristy, and a bird shit directly on her back. Which, I think she was relieved that it was bird shit, because at one point, she was like, wait, something just fell on my back, and her aunt's like looking over, she doesn't say anything, she's just like, oh, and then she starts freaking out. She thinks like there's a spider or something on her. It's like, yeah, it's poop. And it's just the sense of relief on her face. You would never imagine someone who just got pooped on would have that, but she did, and we got her cleaned up. It was fine. She enjoyed the rest of her pizza pie, and we went on our merry way. We'll wash that shirt when we get home. But
God, Dude, if you're going to get shit on by a bird, it might as well be while you're at the beach, though.
Yeah.
Right? You know, you can shake that one off much better than, you know, let's take 12-year-old Kyle Schassberger walking home with his tuba one lonely day after school on the south side of Chicago and getting shit on by a bird overhead in the process.
Hey,
like, come on.
I'll tell you this, though. At least the bird didn't, like, shit in the tuba and then you didn't see it. That would have been bad news, right? Because then the spit starts running through, and yeah, that's a bad time. But yeah, no, man, the beach is good. We're digging it out here. Had some good pizza. Our dog is out here. This is our dog's first trip at the beach, so that's been a bit of an adventure and an education for us on like how to handle that and handle her and handle ourselves. And I mean, really, I guess it's like the warm up for when we're doing the real thing with a kid at some point in the future, you know. So like. It's been hard as hell. I could only imagine if it was a human. So props to you, because I know you've been taking Pudge on vacations with you, and I know she's a great kid, but man, the responsibility factor, I've never had this on a vacation before, and it's real.
Let me tell you, when the kids develop their independence, they become 4 or 5, and mine's almost 6 years old. It becomes a lot easier, obviously, as the years tick on, and I'm almost more concerned about my dog at this point, making sure, you know, 5-year-old and 65-70 pound black lab Hayes is comfy in the car, and you know he's getting an adequate amount of bathroom stops. Which that's a reflection on me as a father, but like look, I'm a good dad, I'm a rad dad, I promise you, but I don't want that dog, you know, shit. He can't tell me pull over, daddy.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
He can't tell me that. So like, I'm more concerned with the dog, but he did well. I'm glad your dog is enjoying the beach, and that's a great way of looking at it. Hey, these are the training wheels.
Yeah.
Your time with your dog with no children for you and your wife is going to allow you to become better adept once you bring the real thing into the world. And for that, man, I commend you for taking the right steps here early and not jumping a phase or a stage. And you're doing it right. You're doing it the right way. So that's awesome, dude.
Yeah. No, my thought was get something that poops in the yard, not in their pants first, and then we'll move up from there.
Yeah, you can graduate up a stage in life after that. So
yeah.
Good luck to you, kind sir. I didn't watch many games of Super Regional Weekend because it was the final 2 days of my trip on Friday and Saturday, you know, where I'm making the final rounds. But I'm hitting the road on Saturday, and I was locked in to radio calls, radio feeds, networks all around the country for the 16 teams that were participating, bouncing around on Saturday throughout my trip, and then finishing the final 3 hours early on Sunday morning, giving me time to actually have a tremendous viewing experience on Sunday. We'll touch on that as we look ahead to the College World Series field, but I feel like in looking ahead, we must listen back to some of those final sounds from a very entertaining Super Regional weekend.
From the stretch, the 2-2 pitch, swing and a miss, he struck him out! For the 37th time in its history, more than any other school in the nation, the Texas Longhorns are going to the College World Series. The Longhorns defeat South Florida, and they are Omaha bound in 2021.
The balls say, hello, wind column. Tennessee says, hello, College World Series. And it's dogpile time in Tennessee. Come on! Break out the big orange bags. It's time to pack up as Tennessee's going back to the College World Series. Tennessee sweeps the Super Regional. Next stop, Omaha.
Justice peers in. He's got the sign from Tresh. The windup and the pitch. Comebacker in front of the plate. Fielded over to first to send NC State to the College World Series. Look out, Omaha. Here comes the Wolfpack!
The first pitch is a ground ball up the middle. It is gloved by Cotto. He throws to first in time for the out. The inning, the ball game, the Super Regional. The three words you love to hear, on to Omaha! Dogpile number 18 on the infield grass as the Wildcats will head to the College World Series this coming weekend. Champions of the Pac-12. Champions of the Tucson Regional, champions of the Tucson Super Regional, and now a chance for a fifth national title.
Now he's ready, another pitch. Guarded ball, two to Brule, gives it to Forsythe, throws it to first, we're going back to Omaha. A double play ends it, and the Bulldogs are jubilant. They have won a Super Regional for the fifth time, and we're dogpiling out on the mound. And this is a ball club that has to be awfully proud of what they've accomplished.
One ball, two strike count on Josh Moylan. Here comes the pitch. Swing and a miss! Strike three! It's Omaha for Vanderbilt! The Commodores sweep the Super Regional with a 4-1 victory over East Carolina. And we'll head to the College World Series for the fifth time since 2011.
Here's the pitch to Young. It is popped up over toward left field, toward the line, into foul territory. Robinson moving over. He's there, and he makes the catch. And the Cardinals are headed to the College World Series. Santa Maria.
Yes!
Oh, that is awesome. KZSU 90.1 FM. That's the Stanford students there on the call who are in Lubbock. Not even close, by the way. The Cardinal just absolutely destroying Texas Tech 15-3 and 9-0 over the weekend. Serbs, all those radio calls, they bring goosebumps. They certainly do. Imagine being in a car driving cross-country, hearing a lot of that over the weekend. I tell you, man, many thanks to all of our radio partners. That's what we do here at Learfield IMG College. So, you know, to be able to access to all of those. Missing one, Virginia, I guarantee you, the one school of eight that'll be in Omaha that we don't hold the MMR, the multimedia rights for, is the one call I couldn't get. Although, Jay Hart with WINA, that is the station that carries the Cavaliers games, he did get back to me. Asked a clarifying question, unfortunately wasn't able to obtain the audio in time here at the time of our recording. So I love you, Hoos. I haven't picked against you here in the last, two and a half months? So, like, give me some props, please. But Mississippi State's Jim Ellis, Vanderbilt's Kevin Ingram, John Wilkerson with the Vol Radio Network, Andrew Sanders with the Wolfpack Sports Network. Heard a little Craig Way there on the horn for Texas, and then Brian Jeffries, Wildcats Radio 1290 in Tucson. Radio, let's go, man. Get it in my veins.
Yeah, theater of the mind, theater of my soul. Let's go, baby.
So let's use that as our pivot point then to kind of unpack what we had seen, and it will help us to set up and frame what we have coming up here this weekend for the start of the College World Series. And when you look at the schedule with what's to come this weekend, two games on Saturday beginning at 1 o'clock Central Time with Stanford and NC State, Vanderbilt and Arizona coming up at 6 o'clock. That'll be game two on Saturday. That is your left side of the bracket. Vanderbilt, the 4 overall seed, taking on 5-seeded Arizona. Stanford, the 9. NC State was a 3-seed in their region, slaying Goliath in Arkansas, so not a national seed. And then on Sunday, you will have Tennessee, who is the second highest remaining seed behind Texas, who is the 2. But Tennessee, the 3, taking on Virginia. That's a 1 o'clock game on Sunday. And then following that at 6 o'clock, also on ESPN2, will be Texas, the 2, against Mississippi State, who is the 7. Saturday's games, by the way, Stanford and NC State, ESPN, Vanderbilt and Arizona on ESPN. So ESPN2 on Sunday, ESPN on Saturday. But Cerber, as we look at what went down, you look at NC State being there. They're the Cinderella, the pack. You and I had a conversation a week ago. Would it be Dallas Baptist? Would it be Virginia? But it was more so DBU or ECU, I think, was kind of our understanding as the two teams in the field that had never been to Omaha. And, you know, DBU being that Omaha program that had never gotten there. And, man, they took game one. There was a hellish rain delay in the ninth inning where you had to wait kind of 4 hours before DBU was able to polish off Virginia. And they got to Andrew Abbott, but the Cavaliers coming away in emphatic fashion with a walk-off home run in game three off the bat of Kyle Teal that sent them over the top and secured them another appearance in the College World Series. 35-25, amazing what Virginia has done after a 4-11 start in ACC play. They lost their 5 straight ACC series. So, Virginia comes out of it. ECU does not. ECU just, again, terrible draw. I mean, it was Louisville a couple of years ago. It was Texas Tech they took to 3 games 3 years, 4 years ago, I think it was. So ECU in their 3rd Super Regional appearance. And, you know, pitching-wise, it was an incredible duel. Gavin Williams against Kumar Rocker on Friday afternoon. Kumar run out, one out, but like ECU, man, they could have, if they were in the Columbia Regional going up against DBU or Virginia, I would have took the Pirates. If they were going up against, you know, any one of these other teams, maybe even Stanford, despite their offense, maybe ECU wins out. But No, neither of – it's not ECU. It is Virginia, but it's NC State, Serber. Did you see this coming with the Wolfpack going down, beating Arkansas for the first time all season? The Hogs lose a three-game series, and they had to beat Kevin Copps. They didn't do it the two times that was necessary, but Copps threw the day before in relief, and then he starts – Game three. What do you think about Dave Van Horn's decision to start Kevin Copps in game three and ask him to go almost nine innings?
Well, as I understand, Arkansas has some injury problems, so they are a little shorthanded, so it makes sense why they would go to him. He National Player of the Year, right? Like, he's your guy. He's your horse. I'm not exactly sure why he pitched him the day before. They're coming off a 21-2 win. They scored three touchdowns against NC State. It didn't quite feel like he needed to be in there, and they lost that game anyway, right? So I think he had to go with him in game three, just given where they were. He's the best they got, and he did a hell of a job. Like, it's not on Copps for this loss, so to speak. They need to get the bats going. He only scored two runs. That being said, NC State pitched a hell of a game, and they were phenomenal throughout the series. But to me, I know Copps is the flashy headline here, but to lose by 19 runs in the first game of the Super Regional, then to come back and win the regional with 2 1-run wins is phenomenal. It shows the grit of the Wolfpack. I wouldn't want to come up against this team because they're going to be so freaking juiced going into Omaha. Everybody's going to be juiced going into Omaha, right? But, like, this is a huge win for the program, for, you know, a great way to go on, you know, beating the number one seed. But to your point, like, the Copps thing, it's an enigma. I'm not quite sure what to make of it. I think it was the right move. What say you?
Well, I bashed it immediately when I saw that he was making the start on Sunday. By the way, tremendous viewing experience for me on Sunday. I had dueling televisions at one of the local establishments here in Winston-Salem near our office, Dogwood. I had 2 TVs at one point with Arkansas State and then Notre Dame, Mississippi State, bounced around a little bit. I got my baseball fix on the tube on Sunday, no question about it. But I was shocked that Kevin Copps was getting the start. But then as the game wore on, and prisoner of the moment, it's like, you're playing with fire here, Arkansas. You've been doing this over the last several weeks. Like, sure, you've won every single series and you've gotten to this point, but, like, Copps is going to wear down at some point. He didn't, though. Like, in hindsight, after the fact, like, sure, he gave up 2 early runs, but Dave Van Horn's decision to ride his best horse in the biggest game of the season, it's hard to fault him for choosing to go with Copps, especially considering, you know, their pitching situation and the limitations that they had. So, like, the more I thought about it after the fact, Serber, I understood it, because if you're gonna ride or die with college baseball's best player. But I still wonder, like, how that changes the approach of your lineup, of your offense, which is consistent and balanced and 1 through 9, like, tremendous. But there's not, like, a big-time, like, alpha male in that lineup, with the exception maybe of Robert Moore. But, like, mm-hmm. Moore was quiet over the weekend, you know? So, like, if you can isolate him or limit him, you know, who else is going to step up in a big moment? We've seen clutch performances from Arkansas's offense all year. Like, I get it. You know, clutch home runs at clutch times. We saw it against Nebraska the week prior in the regional round. But, like, man, I don't know. I just had a bad feeling about Copps starting and asking him to go as long as he had, especially after throwing 184 pitches the weekend before, including 7 straight innings in the clincher against Nebraska, and then throwing, I think, 12 or 15 pitches in game two against NC State. And you're right, Serber. It makes it all the more impressive that State lost 21-2, okay? And they didn't just lay down. I mean, they did in that game. They punted. It was genius. They punted on that game. They didn't waste their pitcher. They scraped the bottom of the barrel to throw guys out there to be able to preserve dudes like Chris Villeman and even Evan Justice. Like, there's no reason to put your workhorse, you know, your big hurlers from the pen in on Friday night. And it paid dividends for them on Sunday. I mean, I think, Serber, this goes down, considering the totality of what Arkansas was able to achieve this year and how everybody was just penciling them in. Most everybody has already been the national champion, and their dominance throughout the season. NC State coming out of, I mean, not nowhere, because you and I are in the ACC footprint, and we've talked about it enough. Like, look, this team started 1-8 in league play. They then went 18-6 down the stretch. They lost 1-0 in the ACC title game. It's one of the hottest teams going up against one of the other hottest teams in Duke. It's funny, by the way, Virginia, as hot as they are, we get two of the hottest teams in the College World Series field in the Cavaliers and the Wolfpack. Just imagine, going back to the question of are the best eight teams in Omaha, just imagine if a team like Long Beach State got an opportunity with how hot they were down the stretch, but they didn't even make the tournament. But State, 17-3 in road games this year, 22-6 away from Raleigh. The numbers don't lie that Elliott Avent has this team ready to play at the right moment, at the right time, juncture of the season, and they're not fazed by any sort of environment. I think them coming in as a 3 seed into Fayetteville makes it one of the more shocking and historic super regional upsets of all time in the fashion that they were able to pull this off, especially after losing 21-2 and then taking Kevin Copps deep for 3 runs, and the Jose Torres home run to put him over the top in the ninth was just legendary.
Yeah, that was that was pretty awesome, man. And I just, you know, Wicklander came in and finished the job for him in that inning. But you know, Arkansas had a chance at the end there, man. You know, you're the number one seed. You know, Welch okay at bat, but I'm looking at the box score here. I didn't see this as it happened in real time. It was on TV. We were eating dinner somewhere, but it was kind of out of my purview. So every now and then I'd like tilt my head and kind of see. And then I specifically remember seeing, oh, crap, NC State just went up 3-2. But I'm looking at the box score here, man. Opti's grounded out on a 1-0 pitch. Battles grounded out on a 1-1 pitch. Like, you got to have more disciplined at bats when the season's on the line right there. I get being confident and everything. But, you know, Arkansas had every chance to finish this out. So props to NC State, 100%. But if you're Arkansas, you got to be disappointed with the way you played down the stretch there. With the exception of Copps, man, he pitched a great game. And circumstances. The one question I don't think we've covered yet in regards to that, and then we can close the book on this, is like, if you're going to do it now, you know, why wait until now? If you're going to start him in this moment, why is this the moment you're starting him for the first time? All season long, you've had every opportunity. And I understand there was injury stuff. I get that. I do. But if, like, he's your guy that you gotta have, like, why just now? So, and that's my only questionable decision on the management side, is this is the first time he started, I think, right? He didn't start this year, correct?
Yeah, no, not this year. He hadn't at all. They were all relief. And yes, you're taking him out of his comfort zone, okay?
Yeah.
You're beginning the game in a situation that you're not accustomed to at all with your close. Like, where's the back end help going to come when
right.
you get into trouble later in the game? Like, what happens if Copps blew up earlier? You know,
right,
he gave
yeah.
up 7 hits.
Exactly.
He gave up 7 hits.
Exactly. Well, and here's the thing, man. Like, you know, Wicklander looked good coming in. Why not just throw him out there and just put him on a pitch count? And say, you know, okay, third inning, we're going to Copps. And then that, if I'm Copps, and that's what I've done all season long, is come out of the pen, especially coming out in the third, fourth inning, and then going the rest of the way. Like, that's where I feel like, you know, okay, that's when I'm going to get the best out of my guy. He had to be nervous immediately going on the mound, starting the game for the first time all year long. So,
and do the same thing you did against Nebraska on Monday night. Start Jackson Wiggins. Like, Wiggins can be your opener, right?
Yeah.
That's the term. I mean, he went 2 innings. He had given up 2 runs against Nebraska, and that's when they knew they had to go to Copps. But, like, I don't know, too. I wonder, as a hitter, and look, I'm not a college hitter. I played baseball my entire life, so these guys are way better than me. But, like, when you know you have Kevin Copps out there to start the game, wouldn't that make you a little more tense as a hitter? Like, oh, shit. Like, we can't mess up. Like, we have nobody to go to after him. And you're pressing more.
Yeah.
Like, the psychology of it, is it taking you out of your element as a hitter? And look, all the credit to NC State and what they're able to do, allowing only 4 hits with Willardson, Villeman, who is a freaking dude, used to live right next door to that guy, and then coming in with Evan Justice, who's one of the best closers in the country. I think as we close the book here, Serbs, like, let's look at this NC State Stanford matchup, because those pitchers, okay, the bullpen that is extremely strong for NC State, and the starters, which I think are more of a question mark, Reed Johnston, Matt Willardson, I feel good about NC State's bullpen, but looking at Stanford's offense and what they were able to do over Texas Tech this past weekend in destroying them in the fashion that they did, 24-3 in two games, this is going to be interesting to see how the power of Stanford and that lineup goes up against NC State's pitching staff. Will the Wolfpack have enough to carry over from Fayetteville? We saw, like, it can get out of hand in a hurry, 21-2, right? Like, Stanford has a more lethal offensive lineup, I think, than Arkansas. They've scored 60 runs in six NCAA games. They're 56th in scoring nationally, 12th in home runs per game. And, man, David Esker has this squad just peaking at the absolute best time, and they are as confident as anyone. So, with that said, Stanford, NC State, it'll be the second game on Saturday. Now, State server has maybe the most consistent 1-9 lineup. And I say that in terms of the lineup card that Elliott Avan has rolled out every single game. It's been the same nine guys. Like, there's been no deviation. So they're filled with, I think they have seven all-ACC selections. Like, they can swing it. They can hit. And Jose Torres, who had three home runs against Arkansas over the weekend, including the game winner against Kevin Copps. I mean, that dude is a freshman, one of the best shortstops in the country, just continuing that long trend of star shortstops out of Raleigh. Like, the NC State bats against the Stanford bats, this is going to be a lot of fun. But can the Wolfpack find enough pitching? And the same can be said for the Cardinal here coming up this weekend.
Yeah, that's a good point on those, that maybe is one of the one, this might be the matchup where there is the most stark difference between the two clubs and how they get it done. We'll see. I didn't see Stanford play at all over the weekend. I haven't watched them this season at all. So you can speak to more authority than I can on them, and I apologize to our listeners. But, like, yeah, I mean, Texas Tech was a good baseball team, and they just absolutely were embarrassed by the Cardinal. I think all these matchups are going to be really good. But if I'm looking through and I'm just taking a peek, like, and I'm going on paper as someone who doesn't know a lot about Stanford and I've seen a little bit more of NC State, I'm thinking, yeah, this could be a wild series. And, you know, it's almost like in basketball when you have a team that likes to play in the half court, which versus a team who likes to play in the full court, right? And those two contrasting styles, and how it's a constant battle to try to kind of get into the zone. So we'll see what happens. But yeah, there's every chance that Stanford jumps on them early, and then yeah, what does NC State do? Do they just back away and just kind of fold, or do they answer the call? Unlike Friday in the Fayetteville Super. So
Stanford and NC State is game one, 1 o'clock Central Time, 2 o'clock Eastern on Saturday, Vanderbilt, Arizona in primetime. David Esker, head coach for the Cardinal. They went 5-11 last year in the COVID shortened year. Now 38-15, 17th appearance, 87-88 national champions. David Esker was on that 87 club. He also took Cal to the 2011 College World Series. They were runner ups three times in 2001 and 03. So the pedigree is there, but Stanford has been absent of late, most recently making their first appearance in Omaha since 2008. And pitching-wise for Stanford, the dude that I was most impressed by in Lubbock, Alex Williams, the guy returned from Tommy John surgery in April, threw a complete game, 124 pitch, two hit shutout, and 10 strikeouts in the clincher. Also, Brock Jones had three home runs over the weekend. Three home runs, rather, in the 9-0 clinching win against the Red Raiders. He's a former football player. He's got 16 bombs. So some of the names there to look out for the Cardinals. So Stanford and NC State will lift the lid on the College World Series Saturday at 1 o'clock. Let's move to the other two teams. Game two on the left side of the bracket. These four teams are all positioned on the left side. So one national championship representative will come from either Stanford, NC State, Vandy, or Arizona. And you look at the Commodores, Cerber, and what they were able to do against ECU over the weekend, winning 2-0, 4-1. Vandy does what Vandy does, right? Like, this is not a surprise. ECU had no answer. A little bit of a generous strike zone, as I was following and what I could understand. But Kamar Rocker and Jack Leiter are going to get the benefit of those calls, especially when it's in Nashville. 7 2/3 innings, 3 hits, 11 strikeouts for Rocker. Leiter, 7 innings, 2 hits, earned run, and 10 strikeouts. So 21 Ks between the two and more than 14 innings pitched. Kamar now on the season, 13-3, 2.46 ERA, 155 Ks to 36 walks and 106 innings. Leiter, 10-3, so 3 less wins. Better ERA, 2.16, that's 0.30 better. 156 Ks, that's one more than his teammate. 41 walks in 96 innings pitched. Arizona might have the most lethal offense. They're fourth in the country in batting. They lead the country in doubles, triples, hits, second in OBP. But man, have they got their work cut out for them against Kamar Rocker and Jack Leiter. But we know this. We've been saying it all year, Serber. Like, who's going to be able to beat both of these guys? But here in this field in double elimination, man, if they get got one time, that might bode well for those other three teams going up against Vanderbilt, because that third starter has been a question mark for Vanderbilt throughout this season.
Yeah, 100%. One thing to think about here is you're trying to break Vandy's serve, so to speak, by taking one of those guys. If you can break their serve, it gives you the leg up. I think even though Arkansas was the number one overall seed, ECU had the toughest draw when it came to the Supers. They've just got bad luck in the Supers in all reality. They played relatively well, I think, defensively. So, but they couldn't get the bats going. That's too bad. But Vandy is going to be a hoss to deal with for on that side of the bracket. There's a way that this could play out in the long run if they make it to the College World Series, where we could see them play a rival in the final. We can get to that later when we talk that side of the bracket. But you're gonna have to chase one of those guys to really have a shot against this team, especially now that we're in this situation where they really don't need to pitch anyone else to start a game. I think at this point in the season, you're starting those two guys almost exclusively. Unless something goes wrong. So that's got to be the mission there for Arizona, who really, none of Arizona's games against Ole Miss were very good. Even the one they lost, they were just, but you know, they had those bats really going in the two wins. So, if they can recreate that somehow against Vandy, which is not, that's easier said than done, especially when you consider Ole Miss is a team that does play a different style and doesn't necessarily, win games, all the time, 2-1, 1-0, things like that. So I would give the edge to Vandy in that game. I like their shot there. Arizona, though, nothing to be taken away. Like the Pac-12 could shock everyone and get into this. Final, I don't know if it would be a huge shock, but they get into this final. But they're going to have to break Vandy's serve here early for Vandy to kind of be put on the back foot. Otherwise, I think they cruise straight through to the final.
So the Pac-12 is a 50% shot, just looking at the left side of this bracket, mm-hmm. in reaching the College World Series Championship Series, with Arizona and Stanford both on the left side. Two Pac-12 teams represented, and then we have two ACC teams in NC State and Virginia on opposite sides of the bracket. The SEC with three teams, and then the one Big 12 representative in Texas. Arizona plays at high Corbett Field, very conducive to pitchers. A lot of ground to cover, big outfield, a lot of gaps, conducive to doubles. That's one of the reasons why Arizona, leads the league in doubles and triples and their on-base percentage is through the roof at .428. I mean, what they've been able to do all year. 8 of 9 of their guys, of their regulars, are hitting above .300. TD Ameritrade Park in Omaha is set up very similar to High Corbett Field. So there's going to be a lot of ground for the Arizona hitters to play with, very similar to their home conditions. So how will that ballpark, play for Arizona? Will play as similarly as they would like to their home ballpark in High Corbett Field? We'll have to see. Kumar Rocker and Jack Leiter, you know the television executives at ESPN are begging for Vanderbilt to come out of the left side of this bracket, where you could have Rocker go on Monday night of a championship series and Leiter go on Tuesday night. Because let's be honest with ourselves, like, that is the most sexy option from a national viewing standpoint, to have those two come out on the left side. SEC Network, by the way, did a couple great features. I was watching some of their baseball postgame coverage Sunday into Monday. There was a sit-down, Kyle Peterson from ESPN, with both Kumar and Jack together, and then separately, Jack Leiter's parents, and then Kumar Rocker's parents, and kind of their upbringing and when they knew, you know, they had the stuff or what it would take to play at the next level. And I thought it was cool. Jack Leiter, as a kid, was very scared and didn't want to be in the clubhouse at Yankee Stadium. You know, as a little kid, he was scared and worried and embarrassed to be around Alex Rodriguez and Derek Jeter. I was like, wow, dude, like, that's pretty cool as a kid to be around those guys. Of course, you know, he understands how great that was, you know, the perspective that comes after. Arizona, their second trip in 5 years under Jay Johnson, lost to Coastal in 2016. They won it all in 2012. Four-time national champions there for the 18th time overall. Chase Silseth and Garrett Irvin are their top two starters. 8-1, 5.54 ERA for Silseth. Irvin at 6-3, 4.19. But Serber, you're right. Not a lot to take away, I think, from the Ole Miss and Arizona series over the weekend, except aesthetically, it was cool because such similar colors, and the Ole Miss fans, you know, really turned out in Tucson. But 9-3, 3-2, and 16-3. A lot of offense. We called that. I mean, that was obvious heading into it. And Doug Nikhazy, I want to look at, because this is what Doug Nikhazy was able to do to neutralize the Arizona hitters in game two. That's the scout, although Jack and Kumar don't need much help in a scout, but that's what you got to look to do to these Arizona hitters. And Nikhazy went 5 1/3, allowing only 2 earned runs, struck out 10, 6 hits, and 121 innings pitched. So the book is out on how to neutralize this Arizona lineup and what Doug Nikhazy did in game two. So Kumar will have the honors at 6 o'clock Central Time on Saturday against Arizona.
That being said, his offense got him 6 runs in the second inning, which is going to be like, that's ever going to happen to Vandy with those two guys on the mound. So yeah, you're right. You know, great. That's a good scout. My dog is freaking out because her mom has gone out to the beach. I apologize. But yeah, I mean, man, Vandy is just so tough on the mound. If they just get to throw those two guys all week long, it's just going to be tough for everybody else.
Poor puppy. What's your dog's name?
This is Mona. Mona Bear. It's okay, honey. You need to take a nap anyway.
It's okay, Mona.
She got a little aggressive at the dog park earlier today, so she got disciplined, you know, when we left there. So it's been a rough day for the Mona Bear, but she's going to be all right. She'll be fine. We'll go out on the beach. She does well on the beach. She just lays there in the sand, you know, dumps sand in her water bowl so that we have to refill it every, you know, 3 or 4 minutes. She'll be all right. She's going to be just fine. But she needs to take a nap. It's nap time, girl. Let me talk about baseball.
You know what was rough? My final night in Chicago almost a week ago, Friday night. So 100% capacity, Wrigley Field. I did not go to the game. I had a golf outing I was participating in earlier in the day. But I go up to Wrigleyville, which is almost unrecognizable every time I go back home now. It's just amazing how much it's been built up, and the bars that line the streets, you know, kitty corner to the marquee and surrounding all of Wrigley. But right there at Clark and Addison, it's incredible. I mean, it's like a scene out of college, but like, take your biggest school and like plop it down on the Jersey Shore or, you know, on Bourbon Street, and like, that is Wrigleyville. Times 1,000. I mean, it's intense. So it was 100% capacity Friday. They're playing the Cardinals. Everybody's drinking out at the game all day game. Then the day game traffic comes out. The nightlife traffic comes in. It all converges together. You've got, man, tens of 12s of, I can't give you a number, just thousands upon thousands of people. The line to get into one of the main bars where I've seen Cubs players in before, after games, like Addison Russell, Carl Edwards Jr. I remember the last time I was there getting a drink and food. Old Crow, it's called. Guess how long the wait to get into this establishment was at 9:30 at night on a Friday in Wrigleyville. How long I had to wait in line.
Jesus, I'm going to compare it to our potential wait had we actually played putt-putt last night, which was going to be 2 hours. I'll go 2 hours. What do you got for me?
Yeah, 2.5 to 3 hours.
Oh, God.
So I waited an hour with my one good buddy while another one of my best friends, my old college roommate, was already inside because his night had started a lot earlier. And communication at that point between, you know, a person who is not drunk and a person who is drunk is frustrating, to say the least. So he came out and we ended up bouncing in a couple of other joints, so without a wait. But wasted an hour of my life, and I'm tracking David Kellum. I'm trying to listen to the Ole Miss Radio Network radio feed, waiting in line, like holding my phone up to my ear. There's people passing out all around me, EMTs, just pure chaos. Like, it's just, it was a scene, man. It was a scene.
Real quick, something we haven't talked about, and I mean, I guess we could have saved this till the end, but I want to get out so I don't forget. Like, you mentioned, like, TV execs kind of drooling over the idea of Rocker and Leiter. I think TV execs are very happy with how this field played out. You know, we've got Texas. There's good representation from across the country, with the exception of the Northeast. But let's be honest. You know, with the exception of Notre Dame this year, there wasn't a lot to love in that particular part of the country. So, you know, you got Texas in there, Mississippi State, Tennessee and Vandy giving you, you know, rival fan bases to think about. Virginia, you know, on the Atlantic coast. You got Arizona in the desert. We got Stanford, Palo Alto in the Bay Area for the West Coast folks. Like, we've got great representation in this. And I know it's all for the most, you know, for lack of a better term, I know Tennessee's only been to 5 College World Series, but we've got a field full of blue bloods here with big fan bases who really support these teams. And I think that's cool. I think it's cool. You know, we've got all this talk going on right now about the college football playoff expansion and everyone, you know, they're trying to, I mean, no one wants to call it what it is, but they want better TV ratings across the country. They don't want more representation because they care about the students and the football teams and the programs. They want it because people in California don't care to see Clemson and Alabama every single season. So I just think this is great that the College World Series has kind of it has something for everyone across the country culturally. Anyone who I think would be interested, obviously the Pacific Northwest may have something to say about that with Oregon State not being included. But you know what? Stanford's a Northern California school, so you guys just chill out. All right.
Yeah, and we got 2 Pac-12 schools, so you're spot on, with the exception of the Northeast. But I think this is a well-represented, a well-balanced field, and you have 3 teams who are bidding for their first-ever national championship. As much success as Mississippi State has had, now 3 straight trips to Omaha. They'll have Texas in Game 2 on Sunday at 6, 7 o'clock Eastern. Mississippi State has not won it. They were the runner-up in 12. Tennessee, they were the runner-up in 1951, making their first appearance since 2005. And NC State, they're making their first appearance since 2013, third overall for the program. They've never won it before. So, and those are all programs that I feel like the country can get behind, especially Mississippi State and Tennessee. You know, those storylines out of the SEC with Tennessee's rebirth onto the national college baseball scene. And let's talk about the Volunteer Service, because I remember a month or two ago, you know, we kept questioning, especially after that Vanderbilt series, you know, does Tennessee belong? Can they do this? You know, they're trying to emerge and reassert themselves, and Tony Vitello, what he's been able to do in restoring order in Knoxville. Tennessee is a baseball school now. Like, I think we can all agree, as the third national seed and getting to this point, to this stage, after beating LSU 4-2, 15-6, ending Paul Maneri's career, who had announced his retirement after 39 seasons, 15 years at LSU, they just had no answer for that Tennessee offense in Game 2. Couldn't throw a guy out there to get a single out. Landon Marceau really struggled. And they hit 6 home runs in the clincher. Jake Rucker had 2 of those. Chad Dallas over the weekend, 6 innings pitched, earned run, 12 Ks. I mean, they're doing it on the mound. They're doing it offensively. They're doing it with a packed Lindsey Nelson Stadium, too. A 50-win Volunteer team, making their 6th appearance in Omaha, and the fans are going bonkers over this club. They're a lot of fun. They have shown Cerber that they belong, and they're not finished yet. I think this might be my team out of the right side of the bracket. I hate to dismiss Virginia so early. Stay tuned for my pick, but dude, I love what the Volunteers have been doing.
Yeah, no, that's a good call, man. And Tennessee, yeah, we did. I just always remember the feeling, you know, when I was helping run Georgia baseball broadcast, when they would play Tennessee, that like this was going to be no problem, you know. And they did have a good deal of success there for in the late 90s and into their last appearance there in 05. But yeah, this is cool for them to get back. This is cool for Tennessee fans in general who have struggled through, you know, middling programs across the board up until recently, with college basketball. The men's basketball team, obviously, you know, arguably the greatest, you know, them or UConn, the greatest women's basketball program of all time, with what Pat Summitt had done there. But, you know, they need somebody right now, I feel like, and I'm glad that they've got the baseball team to pull for, because it's been a rough go in Knoxville in athletics, you know, for the past several years, with the exception, like I said, of what Barnes was able to do with the basketball team over the past few seasons.
And I hope they bring the daddy hat, the pink daddy hat. So another feature from the SEC Network over the weekend where it became a fad. You know, one of the players that wore a pink little type golf hat with the word daddy across the front. They knight players after home runs and big play moments and walk-offs and all of those high energy, enthusiastic moments for the Volunteers all season long. They put the daddy hat on each of the players. So it's become very fun. A lot of swagger. Man, that stadium is small. Lindsey Nelson Stadium, they certainly need to upgrade it, but thousands of people, it seemed like, outside. It just incredible environment. We'll see how it travels to Omaha. It's going to be a lot of fun. Tennessee and Virginia, a team that can also hit. Their offense coming on very strong here of late. As I mentioned earlier, started 4-11 in ACC play. 35-25, though, overall. Really came on hot down the final month of the season, making their fifth appearance in Omaha. They have won six straight elimination games. And Kyle Teal with the grand slam with two outs in the seventh of Game 3 against Dallas Baptist has cemented the Cavaliers' spot in Omaha here this week. 14 home runs in eight NCAA tournament games for the Cavaliers. That's an insane number. Shows you that they've got a power supply there on hand. So Tennessee, their pitchers, you know, that you can't take the Cavs lightly for sure. And that's obvious. We're at Omaha. Like, this is it. Eight teams remain. These are the best of the best, supposedly. At least that's what we're told. So Tennessee and Virginia will be game one, 1 o'clock on Sunday. Game two on the right side of the bracket will feature two-seeded Texas at 47-15, six-time national champions, last time winning in 05, first trip since 18, missed the tournament in 19, six-time champs, plus a runner-up appearance six times as well. 37 times overall they've been to Omaha. Well-traveled Serbs are the Longhorns.
Yeah, man, they come in hot. They haven't lost since the Big 12 tournament. So I think we could say that for them. I believe we could say it for Tennessee, who hasn't lost since the SEC championship game. Vandy has not lost since the SEC tournament. So, yeah, Texas comes in super hot, and they're one of the teams the first game against South Florida, it took a walk-off to get past them, but then they cruised in that second game. But they pretty much cruised through this whole postseason. That being said, we take a look at the teams that they've beaten: Southern, Arizona State, Fairfield, South Florida. They've cruised because they've probably had the easiest road to Omaha of anyone in the nation so far. So, I think when you talk about teams that are fresh who haven't really been challenged much, that's going to be Texas. But does that come back and bite them? Because they, you know, aside from that game one against the Bulls, you know, they've kind of just had their way with everyone. Does that continue, or are they in for a rude awakening against Mississippi State? I think they are. I think Mississippi State's got every chance to just push Texas around, but we shall see.
Between Rowdy Jordan, Tanner Allen, Logan Tanner for Mississippi State offensively, I mean, those dudes, and we saw what Mississippi State was able to do against Notre Dame this past weekend. The Irish, by the way, what an effort from them. Again, they got shafted. They got absolutely I said this a week ago. As a 10 seed having to go to Starkville, I said this 2-3 weeks ago when the NCAA tournament field and seeding were unveiled. This is not a 10-seeded team. Like, they should not be paired up with Starkville. Like, this is blasphemous. This is sacrilegious, would be the most appropriate thing. They should have been an 8-seed. Texas Tech never should have been in there as an 8 because they finished 3rd in the Big 12 and Notre Dame ran away with the ACC by 4.5 games.
Yeah.
Like, they should not have been punished for the lack of a non-con schedule. So they got shafted as a 10 having to go to Starkville. I would have been much more happier and able to come to grips with Notre Dame as an 8 losing to a 9 in Stanford. If that did happen, that would have been a better setup, Notre Dame against Stanford. Instead, Notre Dame, who I think is one of the 8 best teams in the country, and they proved that against Mississippi State over the weekend, is not going to be in Omaha, and I think that's a damn shame. But back to Texas, it was underwhelming, their field. I mean, they sweep through the regionals, they sweep through the super regionals. Now, it did get a little bit hairy, a little bit tight in game one against South Florida after they were up 3-0. South Florida, who asserted themselves very well, I thought, especially in game one, but, you know, they carried the flag well. Like, they were prideful. They weren't going to go away easily. They tied the game up with 3 runs in the 9th before Texas was able to get a walk-off from Eric Kennedy on an RBI double to center field. I don't know where defensively the South Florida Bulls center fielder was lined up. I think that was... he was playing way too shallow, Roberto Pena. So that ball got over his head, and Texas was able to win. Another strong performance from Ty Madden, who's going to be, you know, a first-round draft selection. Went 6 2/3, 9 Ks, 107 pitches. I mean, he's the number one for this Texas ball club. So can Mississippi State get to one of the better aces around the country? You know, that's going to be the question. You know, Ty Madden has shown some vulnerabilities here at times of late recently. I mean, he's thrown 102/3 innings on the year. His ERA is at 2.41. Looking at his numbers here, strikeouts at 119 to 39 walks. I mean, he's the bona fide dude. But he hasn't been as sharp at times over the last month. So Mississippi State, those bats, that veteran-led offense, Rowdy Jordan, Tanner Allen are two fifth-year seniors, I believe. Logan Tanner, a true freshman behind the plate. He delivered that emphatic home run, that big 6-7-run inning early in Game 3 against Mississippi State, where they busted it wide open. Credit Notre Dame, too, for not giving up. And Nico Cavadas, my God, hit like a 500-foot bomb in late innings against Mississippi State. I think that ball still might be sailing off of Landon Sims, who's one of the better closers in the country. So I'm with you, Cerber. I agree. I think Mississippi State is just more put together. And I think getting to Omaha 3 straight years in a row, like, dude, they're due. And I think the consistency of this program under Chris Lemonis, you know, just to think, 5 straight super regionals under 4 different coaches, Cerber. Like, you think about Canizero and Henderson that year where they combined to get to the super regionals and the College World Series, the first of these 3 straight years. And even before that, I mean, Mississippi State is in a spot. Their program is ready. The dude effect has helped to get them to this point. Notre Dame found that out firsthand. And I like the Bulldogs just as much as anybody on this right side of the bracket, but more so than Texas. I think they'll be able to hang with the Horns and hook them in game one on Sunday. That'll be in primetime at 6:00.
Yeah, man, that'll be cool to see, man. But Texas is the big dog. They are the I know Tennessee is technically ranked ahead of them. Are they? Or wait, is Texas the highest ranked national seed left?
Texas is the highest left.
Okay, so yeah, I mean they've got the big target on their back or their butt or their, you know, whatever you have on a Longhorn. So like, yeah, man. If I'm Mississippi State, I'm going out to eat steak on Saturday night. Nice juicy ribeye. You know, hopefully from some Texas cattle, ideally. And then I'm gonna get, you know, try and take down the top team left in the bracket. So it's gonna be a hell of a game. And we've got nothing but just power players left in this tourney.
It's gonna be a lot of fun, man. I can't wait. It all gets started on Saturday at 1:00 on ESPN, Sunday at 1:00 on ESPN2. You've got Stanford and NC State, Vanderbilt and Arizona, then Tennessee, Virginia, Texas, and Mississippi State. Cerber, give me your predictions just on... Now, we're going to record a pod. You and I will talk off air at some point in the next couple of days on a schedule. I feel like we should put another one out next week as, you know, teams are getting eliminated.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we should probably put one out, you know, before the championship series is set as well. So you and I can confirm those details. But I want to get a pick now, preliminary pick, as the College World Series is going to begin on Saturday. Who do you like out of the left side, okay, to get to the national championship series? And who do you like from the right side?
Vandy's on the left side, right?
Yes.
Vandy. On the right side, Tennessee. All Tennessee, Volunteer State, final. Book it. It just means more.
I had a feeling you were going there when you teased that All-Tennessee, little rivalry SEC matchup. We last got an All-SEC matchup in 2017 when Florida took down LSU. So three SEC teams are represented. I agree with you. I think Vanderbilt is best set up to defend their national title and possibly do something that hasn't happened in 10 years, South Carolina being the last, and that is to repeat as national champions. I'm not going to go that far yet, but I do like Vanderbilt getting the championship series. And then on the right side, like, dude, come on. I can't diss my Hoos. I've been going with Virginia this whole time.
Yeah.
Come on. I'm not going to veer off the path. The blueprint has been established by me several weeks ago. I'm going to go with Virginia. We're going to have a 2014 and 2015 National Championship Series rematch. That's how I feel. I'm going with that. But, dude, the right side is so much more difficult, is it not? Like,
yeah.
I feel good. I feel really good about Vanderbilt on the left side. But I can make a case, with the exception of Texas, for Mississippi State and Tennessee just as much. I'm just kind of rolling the dice with a little bit of a Cinderella-like pick. I mean, the national championship history is there for Virginia, but considering the improvements that had been made this year, like, that is still a stretch for the Cavaliers to get through teams like Tennessee, Mississippi State, and, of course, Texas. So, dude, I can't wait. It's going to be a lot of fun Saturday and Sunday. Before we wrap up, dude, I just want to roll through some coaching carousel news at this point. Kirk Salus is now the TCU head coach. He's been on the staff since 2012. Was the pitching coach, so they promote from within to replace Jim Schlossnagel. And then Willie Bloomquist, former big leaguer and also former Sun Devil, tabbed to lead his alma mater at Arizona State. Jose Cruz Jr. is at Rice. He replaces Matt Braga. That's another former Owl that's taking over. So a couple of alumni picks there. Jose Cruz Jr. coming over from the Detroit Tigers organization. As he was an assistant coach. And the big one here is going to be LSU now. Serves now that, and I just refreshed Twitter because I want to be as current on this as possible. I feel like news can break at any moment here for Paul Maneri. It could be by the time this hits your podcast feed, you know, Thursday afternoon on the West Coast, Thursday morning, late morning, early afternoon here on the East Coast. But it's down to two guys and could be three. Like, I feel like Link Jarrett at Notre Dame is going to be the wild card. You know, does LSU look to follow the same path? And Paul Maneri is going to have a huge say in this, right? You got to think he's consulting and he's going to have say in the decision-making process with the AD. But Paul Maneri came from Notre Dame. Like, he was in South Bend. And he won 40-plus games in all but one of 12 years while he was there before leaving for LSU after the 06 season. Nine regionals, one College World Series appearance in 02. Now, Link Jarrett hasn't been there as long, just two seasons. But look at what Notre Dame has been able to do in 2 years. One full season. The lineup, the pitching, the competitiveness, the grit, every aspect of Notre Dame, Link Jarrett's fingerprints are all over it. Just imagine what he can do in an SEC ballpark, in an SEC town, in the Deep South, with the roster that is already in place for the Tigers. Like, that team can win a national championship next year. They are so young. You insert a guy like Link Jarrett, who has already proven in just a full year that he can put Notre Dame on the doorstep of making it to Omaha, and he hasn't even had a full recruiting cycle. You know what? Maybe a year and a half, two seasons tops. So he can walk in, and I think he's most ready with what he's been able to accomplish at Notre Dame to turn LSU into a national championship contender because they already have the roster. However, Serbs, with that said, it looks more like, though, it's going to be between ECU's Cliff Godwin or Ole Miss's Mike Bianco. What do you think about those two options and how the LSU coaching search might shape up?
The Bianco hire, I think, would... While, okay, he's had success in the SEC, you're probably going to have to pay up more for him, wouldn't you assume, than you are for Godwin or Jarrett?
Yeah, but, I mean, is money really an issue for LSU and LSU baseball? I mean, he's one of your own. That's the thing. He played... Yeah. At LSU from 1988 and 1989, he was the starting catcher, team captain his final year. 54-year-old was also an assistant under Skip Bertman. Remember, Bertman won five titles in a 10-year stretch, 93 to 97. Bianco was there under Skip Bertman, who preceded Paul Maneri. All-time winningest coach at Ole Miss, head coach there since 2001. His son is on the LSU team in Drew. the parallels, the lineage, all of that can say, like, I mean, Bianco shouldn't undervalue himself. No, he should get what he's worth, and he should get paid. But at the same time, there's the sympathy play here in you going back home. I don't know. That's tough, though, looking at what you've built at Ole Miss at the same time.
That's a tough situation to always go into, right? Like, we saw Mark in football. We saw Mark Richt do it at Miami after he was let go at Georgia. It went okay, you know, but then he was quickly gone. It's really tough to go back to your alma mater. There's so much expectation, and there's going to be expectation no matter what, I think, at LSU, even if it's Godwin or Jarrett, for that matter. And he's going to have a lot of expectations at Ole Miss if he goes back there. So, I think if they call him, he's going to say and he says yes. Cool. If not, though, you're right. There are two other very good candidates out there that I don't think would say no. Like, Bianco is the wild card in that maybe it's his decision above all. Like, I know we said Maneri is going to have a say in this, but Bianco's the guy that probably says no, if any of them do. I think Godwin...
You think that's an easy decision to leave Notre Dame to go LSU? Come on. Link's a better dude than that. You're undersung. You think he's just going to bolt for the sexy woman at the bar and leave, you know, the one he's been with for 2 years.
I'm just thinking about, like, you know, steps in a career. And I don't want to take anything away from Notre Dame, because I think to be the head coach of any Notre Dame program, not just football, any program, immediately puts you among the elite of the elite of the elite in the country. You immediately have one of the best jobs in the country. Now, the expectations that come along with that, it's also one of the most difficult jobs in the country, because you must deliver. Notre Dame is not going to keep you around if you have back-to-back losing seasons, you know? So, don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to disrespect the Irish, because any job, that is the most, when it comes to athletics, and academics for that matter too, the extremely prestigious school academically, when it comes to athletics, everyone knows who Notre Dame is. Everyone. Every part of the country. They know what they look. They know what every uniform looks like. They know that. They know that old blue and gold. You know, like, they know it. You might have a point there that it's just, you know, Godwin is the guy, though, that's like, would you please call me so I could get a super regional? I may actually win. I just don't want to take on, you know, the number one pick in the MLB draft again. Please. Like,
yeah, I think for Cliff Godwin, and look, there's a connection. If Paul Maneri is helping, which we know he's going to consult, he's going to help secure his replacement. He's going to have a say. Cliff Godwin spent 2 years under him at LSU from 06 to 08 after being with him at Notre Dame as well. So there is a relationship between Godwin and Maneri that exists, where maybe that gives Godwin the upper hand and kind of eliminates Bianco. But then you got the Notre Dame to LSU. And I think it was different when Paul Maneri left Notre Dame. Like, sure, tremendous success. You know, a College World Series appearance in 02, 9 regionals, 40-plus wins almost every single year. But when you're asked to come to LSU to replace Skip Bertman, who won 5 titles over his tenure, it's a little different of a situation in Notre Dame baseball. I think was playing a lot of catch up to LSU at that time in terms of facilities and resources and all of that. And still the same is true today. Notre Dame is not LSU. It's not in the SEC. But I think there's more glamour to what can be achieved at Notre Dame versus LSU, the current version of LSU today, who just has their last title coming in 09 and a runner up finish in 17. It's not what Skip Bertman necessarily left behind, but Paul Maneri leaving behind 39 years total in coaching, 1,505 wins, 777 losses, 8 ties, 641, 285, and 3 in 15 years at LSU. Just an immaculate, immaculate career. One of the best all-around good guys as well. Hope to see him in the broadcasting industry. I know a lot of people are gunning for him to do some television. I think he'd be very good at that. Hat tip on the way out to Oklahoma. Women's College World Series winners. 5th national title. They've won 5. 3 of the last 5, beating Florida State 6-2 and 5-1 after dropping the series opener 8-4 against Florida State. First number one overall seed to win the national title since 2015. 15 home runs, 49 runs scored, the most all-time in a single Women's College World Series, according to ESPN stats and information. All right, Cerber, I know you got to go join your wife, bring Mona, go to the beach, have fun, man. Get wet for me, okay? I'm gonna go try and swing a golf club and probably, you know, tear my shoulder even worse. So wish me luck on that, my kind friend.
Best of luck, Bryson. Have fun.
Dude, U.S. Open, man. We didn't even get a pick out there. That's okay. We don't have time. I'm going Bryson. You know I'm going Bryson.
No.
Do you have one? Do you have one ready?
Lefty. He shocks the world again, back to back. Let's go.
Oh, my God.
He's going to tear it up at Torrey. That's where they are, right, Torrey? Torrey Pines. Yeah.
Home turf. It's going to be fun, man. Father's Day weekend. Happy Father's Day to all the rad dads out there, including myself and you, Mr. Dog Dad.
Hey,
incredible himself.
Happy Father's Day to you, man. You're a great dad.
Thank you. He's Michael Cerber on Twitter at @L_Cerberino. I'm Kyle Schatzberger at Kyle Schatz. Follow at CS Now. Tweets all weekend long. We'll be tweeting content. I'll do better this weekend. I'm home. I'm in routine. Let's go. College World Series starts on Saturday and Sunday at 1 o'clock. Have a good weekend, y'all. Bye.